Just in time for summer, the folks at Epic Brewing have released a new canned cocktail, the Utah Margarita. A delicious blend of real lime and agave, the Utah Margarita is ready to drink by the river or in the park. And here's the kicker, no need to buy it at a liquor store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or visit Epic Brewing on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. Across this city, local nonprofits are hosting their annual legislative recaps. Whether it's a themed brunch, happy hour, or report card, throw a rock and you'll find an issue-focused community huddle about what the legislature did or didn't do this year. So, in that vein, here's ours. A quarter of all Utahns have a disability. What does the legislature's approach to disability lawmaking mean for all of our wages and our healthcare and our worldview? It's Monday, March 18th. I'm Ali Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Shelby Hinsey, you are a disability advocate and a former journalist who lives with spinal muscular atrophy. You've been on the Hill year after year witnessing the legislature and asking the Utah legislature in particular to expand rights for people with disabilities in a variety of ways. Before we get into the nitty-gritty here, I want to ask, if you had to give lawmakers a letter grade on how they did this session, what would it be?
That's a great question. It would be pretty low. I don't even know that you could give them a grade because I don't think they did anything to be graded on, you know? If you don't turn anything in, how do you get a grade?
I mean, I think if you don't turn anything in, you get a zero. You get a zero.
Yeah. It was a disappointing session, I think. So, didn't even get turned in.
Yeah. I mean, in a few words, how would you characterize the legislature's approach to disability lawmaking or even just relationship with disabled Utahns?
I think within Utah, we have this view of disabled people. We put them on a pedestal and really highlight, you know, the overcoming and the community support. Look at what all of these nice high schoolers did for their disabled classmate. But then we don't actually examine why it is in the first place that people need to overcome these issues and these barriers. Mm. And instead of looking at how can we help remove these barriers in the first place, we say, well, you know, if so-and-so could do it, if my kid could do it, if this kid in my ward could do it, why can't you?
Yeah. You tweeted a couple months ago that you recently lost Medicaid coverage. Medicaid is the program that gives low-income Utahns access to health care. This happened because you started making too much money. Now, a bill failed this session that could have bumped up the Medicaid income cap for people with long-term disabilities. So then, theoretically, that wouldn't have been as much of an issue for you. How would it have changed your life?
Yeah, it's... So I want to, like, preface this. I'm going to do my, like, liberal advocate caveats here of... I recognize that I have a lot of privilege and I got really fortunate in this instance to be able to make the jump to the point of making enough money that I can pay for personal care assistance out of pocket. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of people and for a long time, I didn't have that opportunity because of the way that the system is set up. And so we got to do a little background first, I think, to really help people like fully understand what the system looks like.
Let's do it.
So when you're on Medicaid, there are several different programs. And Medicaid is federally funded but ran by the states. So basically, and this is a very, very simplified version, and there are going to be people that are like, you didn't give all the details, but this is the simple version. So each state has different laws and rules around what they cover, what they won't cover. There are, you know, obviously federal guidelines and mandates, and then the states can choose to go beyond those. So when you're on Medicaid, there is a program called the Medicaid Work Incentive Program, which is for disabled people to give them an incentive to continue working. There are a bunch of rules about how long you have to have been working. You can't just, like, the second you turn 18, if you have been disabled your whole life, you don't just, like, automatically get on that program. You have to work for a few years, but you can get on that program, which has a higher income cap.
Okay.
When I say higher, it changes year to year, and it changes by person as well. They can do some, like, kind of individual numbers. But basically, for me, as someone who needs 8 hours a day of personal care assistance, and those are folks who help me get in and out of bed, get dressed, shower, use the restroom, cook, clean, you know, all those things that, like, you have to do to live.
And to keep going to work every day.
Right. And to go, yeah, to go to a job, you have to have that support. The income cap was about $53,000. So you couldn't make more than $53,000 a year.
Yeah, I mean, that's well below the area median income for Salt Lake City or Salt Lake County.
Exactly. So the other aspect of eligibility is there's also an asset cap. So you can't have more than $2,000 in your bank account and savings account combined at it, like, any given time.
Okay.
So, and that number does change sometimes depending on what program you're in, and but either way, it's nothing. Like,
no,
even when
I
they
mean,
increase the cap, it's nothing.
You would think the federal government and the state of Utah would want people saving for an emergency across the board.
Right. There's a bunch of reasons why we don't change those caps. I mean, there's not a ton of political will to do it. So, you know, we don't want to change the federal poverty level, because if you do that, it just looks like there's a lot more people in poverty on your watch. So you don't want to be the president or the senator or the governor who, you know, all of a sudden poverty went up in your state just because you changed the goalpost. Anyway, so you have these caps. And then there's also, you know, another hurdle that folks on Medicaid have is marriage equality. If you get married and your household income then exceeds that cap, and the cap is different for households, but it's still lower than the median household, you can also lose benefits. So there's all of these hurdles to things that we want to encourage people to do. We, you know, as a state, we say we want you to work, we want you to get married, we want you to have kids, but we're going to put these hurdles in the way. And so a lot of people may say, you know, okay, well, if you're making more money, just get insurance through your employer, which is great, except there is no private insurance in the country that covers lifelong personal care assistant. So you're too disabled to not to live without it, but not disabled enough to get it paid for through private insurance. So you have to be on Medicaid, and that's what pays for it. You either pay for it out of pocket or you pay for it through Medicaid.
So it sounds like what you're saying is, in the eyes of the government, both federal and state of Utah, you are making more money, potentially too much money, to qualify for assistance paying for these services. But is it really panning out that way? Like, when you lost Medicaid coverage, this Medicaid coverage, and started having to pay out of pocket for this care, do you still feel like someone who's making more money?
So I will say, in my personal life, I am okay. I am making enough. I have great family support. I just got really lucky that I was able to go from making below the income cap to making enough money to pay for all of this in one employment jump, one job change. But it also is hard to, you know that I am making more money, and so much of that money is going to something that could be paid for by the government. For me, that's the bigger issue in general, is this idea that we've really limited people to what they can accomplish incrementally, and because you have to work your way up. And there are very few people that just start out right away making enough to cover all of these expenses. And then there's a bit of a like defeatist attitude too of like, well, I can't do this. I can't, you know, make more money and still have the support I need to live. So I'm just going to stick with what I am doing or what I know.
Yeah.
And I think that just, you know, that's not the Utah way. You know, we talk about that all the time. When we place barriers in front of folks that makes them want to just be complacent or need to be complacent, that's not what we say we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I mean, also, if you just think about what it looks like to negotiate a raise with your employer or with your boss, like, it's all about meeting in the middle. The conversation doesn't go, listen, please either give me a 1% raise that keeps me under this income cap or a 20% raise, but I would not like a 5% raise, so I'm actually going to reject that.
Exactly.
Like, it's just so, it's one of those, like, you can see how on paper we've twisted ourselves into knots trying to make this make sense, and it simply doesn't in practice.
And I will say, too, I think, you know, something that we forget a lot about disabled people is, you know, we are people that interact with the world and are consumers. You know, if you want to look at this from like a purely economic standpoint, like, you want people to have money to be able to go out and spend and invigorate the economy. If that's mm-hmm. the goal, and to be paying more taxes, most of the women that help me, they either have a full-time job and then they come over and help me for a couple hours in the morning or the afternoon, evening, or they're stay-at-home moms. And so this is a little extra income for them as well that they wouldn't be able to get anywhere else.
Yeah.
So we think of it as like, oh, this is a disability issue, but it's so much bigger than that.
Yeah. It's an all of us. It's an all of us issue.
Right. And I think also just something a lot of disabled activists say too is, you know, everyone is going to be disabled at some point. Either you temporarily, permanently, and if you aren't, then you probably died young. But everybody's going to age. Everybody's going to have a time where they have some sort of disability. So if you think this doesn't impact you, it just doesn't impact you yet. With the bill that I was trying to help get passed for Medicaid, raising the Medicaid income cap, it's been 2 years that we've put this bill out, and then it failed on the floor. And I should also add that bill wouldn't just like automatically change the income cap. It was literally asking for legislative permission to go ask Medicaid if we could do that. So it was like the first step in a step of many. And instead of saying, you know, let's see what happens, it just got shut down. And there were several people that were there virtually and in person to, you know, explain this bill and speak in support of it. And then to get shut down, it's kind of disheartening.
Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita. A delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave. And they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a 6-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's. Or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. Yeah, Yeah, I mean, on the note of labor and wages, Utah is one of the states that still allows employers to pay disabled workers a sub-minimum wage, which is even less than the state and federal minimum wage. In Utah, our minimum wage is $7.25. That's also federal minimum wage. There are examples of these sub-minimum wages being paid to disabled workers being less than $3.50 an hour. There was a bill this past legislative session that would have raised that wage, and it failed. The bill's sponsor said about 554 people with disabilities are currently being paid a sub-minimum wage in Utah. What kind of message does this send?
So basically what it is, the sub-minimum wage allows employers to pay disabled workers lower than the federal and state minimum wage for activities that they deem menial. So a lot of times it's sorting, recycling, shredding paper, things like that. And the goal of these kinds of programs is to have someone start in this program and then get some job training, and then they can go out and find other work that would pay them the minimum wage or above. However, we've seen that a lot of these programs will change the goalpost for graduating their program, and folks just kind of get stuck in them for, you know, however long. Or they, you know, they may enjoy the work. They may not know that there are other options for them. So they kind of just get stuck in these programs where they're really being taken advantage of for work that, yes, may seem menial, but does also need to get done. And there's a couple arguments for keeping it. One, going back to Medicaid, is if, you know, folks make more money, will they lose their Medicaid?
That's so cynical. I mean, that's just so cynical.
Right.
Painfully cynical, but
there's
the reality.
And you know, lots of, especially like parents groups or, you know, the companies that employ these people, you know, say, well, they enjoy having the opportunity to, you know, go to work and have income and feel like they're participating in the community. And I'm like, yeah, you can do that still and still pay them $7.25 an hour. Like,
yeah, that's incredibly patronizing.
Exactly. So that is one that is also just incredibly frustrating, because it doesn't need to be that way. And
yeah,
I think, again, for legislators, it's just not a priority. And we've made a lot of these issues that suck the air out of legislative sessions, you know, all of the DEI bills and the trans bathroom bills, all of these things that, and I don't want to say that, you know, those bills are unimportant. They are obviously incredibly important, but we shouldn't even be talking about it in the first place. Mm. And then other bills start kind of falling by the wayside, and it provides some cover to some of these other bills that people just miss.
I mean, so I have to tell you, I was curious about this some minimum wage bill not making it through, and looked into who are the employers in Utah that are leveraging this exemption. There are 9. And of all the different employers that are utilizing this exemption to pay their employees with a disability a sub-minimum wage, the biggest user is the state of Utah.
Oh, yeah.
It was the Utah State Developmental Center, which is a division of the state of Utah Department of Health and Human Services. So I don't think you're conspiracy theorizing. It seems like the call is coming from inside the house.
No, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, that is just, it's frustrating to me as well, knowing how low the minimum wage is anyway, and to think that we don't value people and their labor enough to even pay them that little is just so mind-boggling to me. And I don't even know what else to say about it. It really does just show how much we don't value disabled people's labor, their perspective. I should also mention a lot of places that use this subminimum wage also segregate their disabled workers from their non-disabled workers. So other employees are not being exposed to employees with disabilities, which is a flaw and a really big missed opportunity to help people understand disabled people. You know, when you don't see them, when you think they don't exist or they don't work or they don't contribute to society, it's really easy to think that you don't need to protect their rights.
When it comes to lawmaking that could make people's lives easier, safer, more livable, more emergency proof, there's this sentiment in Utah around not relying on government handouts. I would put government handouts in quotes. And in Utah specifically, there's a feeling that we should lean into the charity of our communities. Maybe you could chalk that up to the LDS faith. But I want to know how you think that impacts the way that people with disabilities are able to thrive in our state.
Yeah. So this is something as a member of the predominant faith in Utah that I think about a lot, and something that I really saw highlighted during COVID especially, was, you know, as a religious community, as a Utah community, we're really good at stepping up in catastrophes. So, you know, the windstorm of 2020, you know, people were out cutting up broken trees, downed trees. We're out helping their neighbors, and we're really good at those things that have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And you see the fruits of your labor. But we, you know, had a much harder time being willing to wear masks, where you don't know how long you're going to be doing this. You don't know how long, or you don't see the people necessarily that you are helping. You don't get those warm fuzzies, and you don't see the end result. It's a lot harder to rally people to help in those kind of chronic needs. And it makes sense. I mean, you know, I don't think any of us are immune to that burnout. And, you know, you kind of, your friend has a family member pass away, and you're there for them the first 2 weeks, and then life moves on, and you have things that you have to deal with. And they are still dealing with that forever. And I think when help is sporadic as well, or unreliable, that is so incredibly draining mentally that it does kind of get to a point where you're like, you know what, I'm not even going to ask, because I'm going to have to face possible rejection or being let down by someone saying, yeah, I can do that. And then, you know, them not showing up, being unreliable. It's a lot easier to have that accountability and to have the surety that you're going to get what you need when you're paying for it. And I think we, just as humans, struggle to ask for help. And when you have a disability, you have to do it all the time. And so when there are times that you can remove some of that anxiety of having to verbalize your needs, like, that makes such an impact on mental health and feeling comfortable and feeling safe. And it frees up so much space in your mind to do other things.
Particularly in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, more people are working with different abilities. We, of course, still don't even fully understand the impacts of long COVID. According to the Utah Department of Health and Human Services, one in every four Utah adults has a disability right now. Something that comes up a lot on this show is like, okay, where the state has, in the most generous terms possible, left us wanting. Where can our city, Salt Lake City, where can our county, Salt Lake County, take bigger swings? What would you say?
There are so many things that seem trivial and small, but are actually, like, would make a huge difference. Clearing the sidewalks, that's a big one. Transportation, that's a huge one. You know, we offer a lot of services to low-income and aging folks. We have these services. I am not totally sure how available they are because I am, if you can't tell, I am not 65.
Shelby's super young and cool, listeners.
I'm really hip. Please like me, Gen Z. But we have these systems already sort of in place that we could utilize more. I mean, something that would just be really helpful to me is if the city or county, as part of employment, helped me connect with people who would want to work as a personal care assistant, you know, as part of the unemployment program or something like that. So I think there's things like that. There is that encouraging of employing folks with disabilities and doing whatever we can to get folks with disabilities more visible. And when people start to see, you have this cycle of a space is inaccessible, so disabled people don't go, so people think that disabled people either don't want to do that activity or don't exist. And it's just this cyclical issue. So when we just, when it comes to disability, and I think any civil right movement and justice, civil justice movement, there is partially you have to change laws and partially you have to change minds, and they have to go together. And so in the places where we can't change laws, there is a lot we can be doing to change minds. Employing disabled people in visible roles within the community, having disabled legislators, disabled lawmakers, city council members. I will say back to Medicaid, staying on Medicaid makes it really hard to run for office because you can't have money in the savings account. So,
oh my God, are you soft launching your campaign right now?
No.
Okay, fine.
One day maybe, but not right now. But, you know, having folks in those more visible roles, I have so many people tell me all the time, like, not because they didn't want to understand, they just didn't have the resources to understand what life is like for me. And, you know, and I'm saying that as someone who has been fairly successful in life and has a lot of privilege that has allowed me to be successful. And I still am hitting these roadblocks. What does that look like when, you know, you don't have parents that have economic stability, or you English isn't your first language, or you have developmental disabilities as well that maybe make communication harder? You know, there's just all of these things that until we start seeing folks thrive in those roles, that will also help pull down some of those barriers as well.
Shelby Hinsey, Salt Lake disability advocate and a former journalist, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
A lot of our research for this episode came from a great piece in Prism Reports about how Utah's unique brand of discrimination undermines the value of life in our state. Shout out to the reporter, Ellie Bell. I've linked their full story in the episode notes today. Give it a look. That is all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. We will be back tomorrow morning with more from around this city.